Accession number 9339, reel 19.
Mr. William Holbrook, Reel 19. We were talking about open warfare, and you'd been trained in the pre-war army
for that.
How about the newer recruits or people?
Well, they didn't much training. They'd been trained for a month or so, probably 6 months or more, but not the same. And they were what we were treated like the nations of Vietnam. Well, they're not a wonderful fellow, but my fingers on that. That was for a conscript. Well, this was in the latter part of the war. There's a fellow came out and joined my company, named Grant.
Oh, sorry, yes, you
I
did.
I thought I told you that. Yes, that's it. Well, on another occasion, did I tell you where we blew up a mine. They said, we blew up a mine. This was Arras Way. And we went to take the crater. You had to rush forward to take it, so you can't. When we got down, the Germans, because a lot of the Germans were dead there, and a lot of them got away. So, while we were there talking, in this, we'd been there about, I suppose, 20 minutes in this crater where we'd blown up, and some Germans appeared over the top of the edge of the crater. So, some fellow said, look out, kill them, he said, they're killing our wounded, I remember the fellow said. With that, a lot of open fire, and hit two of them, and one. They killed one, and one fell down the edge of the crater and dropped, and his body was in the crater. We were not there, they were sitting there. And one fellow showed up, was having something to eat, some biscuits or something, and was sitting on this German, eating some, what have you got to eat, biscuits or something. Been there about also half an hour, quarter an hour. And some fellow said, Jack, he said, that fellow's moving under you. He said, moving. He said, moving. He said, yes. So he got up, and the fellow was wounded. And he's afraid to speak. I think it made a noise, I said, because he thought he'd get killed, so he sat there to kill him. And he'd been sitting there eating some biscuits and bullion, the fellow was wounded. And he got him up and bandaged him and sent him back.
What about, but in the open warfare, would you give advice to people from your earlier training, your superior training, when you're in open warfare, would you give advice to the people who haven't had the benefit of so much training?
What, the other... Feel
to other people in your unit.
Feel superior to them, I mean.
No, would you give advice to them? Would you help them?
Oh, yes, you do that. Pull them down, that's what I've done. Oh, yes. But if you see the attacker, they'll be attacking on you. You saw where there was cover, you pull them down, get them under cover. Oh, yes, that happened lots of times. Or you'd help others with the... when they went a bit crazy, you know, you'd pull them down and hold them back at the trench and sit, keep them quiet and that little business. Oh, yes. You did that lots of times. I think.
What do you mean about them going crazy? Could you tell us about that?
Yes, well, you'd be probably... I was with one bit of part of the line, I forget who it was now, but this fellow was started calling out for his mother and calling out and trying to climb over the top, to get over the top of the line and... So I got him down and pulled him down, and I hit him in the end. And I got to do, pulling, you know, keep me out of the way. But oh yes, you've got fellows like that would run along and shout and cry. Some would sit down and wouldn't shout and just cry, and it made you feel bad yourself, you know, if you saw a fully grown man there sit there crying, and you didn't feel very happy about it. Oh yes, that happened lots of times. Yes, that's a. For people knew most of the other soldiers knew, and the officers were very kind like that. They, if a man was like that, they'd help him get down the line and all that sort of thing. They were very good. Our officers weren't a rough lot, so they were very kind to the men.
Would the younger soldiers come to you for advice a lot, as an old soldier?
Well, they would, yes. They come. They say. I said, Bill, I've got to do so-and-so. What would you do? They said, oh, yes, they came to ask for that. You just put them right and obviously you do and tell them what they said. Oh, they should like to do that. They would. They never. Well, some were very young, you know. Some were. Well, they were young. I've often wondered what happened to them all. For most of those,
and they'd actually take notice of your advice.
Oh yes.
So you were quite a respected authority as an old soldier.
Well, look at what they said. They were a lot older than me. A lot of them were, but they didn't. Well, they didn't look as though you were bossy any of that. They just asked you what you. I said, what did you do, Bill, for this crime? What did you do, that sort of thing? And you tell them, thank you very much, and that's that.
If you saw somebody doing something wrong or dangerous, would you...
Oh, yes. Yes, he turned. I remember seeing the fellow, he says, Harris, he lighted a fire, he got a fire, and he said, near the cage, he was undercover, in the trench, well, the part of the trench, the reserve part of the trenches, was very much undercover there, and he was lighting a bit of a fire, make some tea for the there, and I knew... Sometimes I'd seen some Mills' bombs there, so I got him out of it. I said, there'll be some Mills' bombs about there. And really, he did the fire for a couple of Mills' bombs. Yeah, I mean, it seems like that you know better than they would, and little things that they'd be pleased you'd tell them. Of course, they would. Oh, yes, they're not so fun as really, though.
Are there any other incidents you can remember from the fighting in 1918?
No, what?
Any other incidents you can remember from the fighting in 1918, during the retreat or the advance?
I suppose a few there. I took a couple of German prisoners. And
when did that happen?
That was at on the Cambrai front. It just before after Cambrai. Well, there was occasions like that, and getting hardly wounded, and you get them in and all that sort of thing, and they help bandage them up. And oh yeah, you do that to them. Nobody was treated roughly. Well, I told you about the fellow. He was shot in the side, didn't I? Blood and water came out of his. I often think then that if anyone there had been at a photograph and taken a photo of me and that fellow, one a German soldier, one an English soldier. He was lying on the ground, moaning and groaning, badly wounded, and I'd been there to help make him do water. See, that's the thing that happens. You never took them as enemies. You knew they were in the same position as yourself. Oh, yes.
Did you realise the war was coming to an end in October, November?
Oh, yes, because they were prisoners again and so on. And then one occasion here, we kept about... was only 300 or 400 prisoners, or something, must have been. And I was looking at them then. Half-star boys, some of those, half of that part of the 3 or 400 that we captured, or gave themselves up, were under 16 years of age. Young little children look half-star and frightened. Terrible, really. And another thing I'd like to say about then, when we got in towards the end of the war, I found one day, some papers that had been issued by the German authorities, explaining about the war and all that sort of thing. But what I was going to say there, see, was some papers printed in German that we printed, our people printed them, right back to headquarters, so. And they printed, and on one I remember there was a German soldier, it was all in York, I couldn't understand what they said, and his mother was saying goodbye to him, see, right from the front. And then it's where he was killed. Up come number two, mother saying goodbye to him, kissed him goodbye. Then, another one come. He died. And then the third son, his mother was saying, "Oh, don't go. Look at the others. It'll be the end of you. You're the only one I've got left." So he did it really to stop the Germans from volunteering. They did a lot of that sort of thing. Send papers and leaflets down to try and influence the German troops about the work. What they then what I saw, they got German bodies. One of our bodies. When they boiled them down, make a fat corpse fat. I remember seeing that.
That was a leaflet.
Leaflet, yes. Where they make eat their own corpse fat or butter and that sort of thing. Nothing like it happened. But they did a lot of that thing in the leaflet. Propaganda.
Really. And you found these leaflets behind the lines?
Yeah, dropped behind the German lines. And we should find a lot of them, you see. I did notice that as the time went on, how young they were. They weren't that bombastic sort of, they knew it all sort of, they were very, very friendly, forgiving and nervy and that sort of thing. I mean, that's all.
What can you remember about the end of the war? Where were you?
the theme for the war. Oh, a place called Erskirchen, I think, Germany. Erskirchen, I think it was. And then, oh no, it was the end of the war, no, sorry, I was at Maubeuge, the end of the war. And that's what Mons, on the level of Mons, got back to almost where we started. And we were, this particular morning, we got up, the air got up the front, and in the air there's rumours of the armistice, there's talks of armistice, you know, been down for some days. And I thought, this one, don't I go up the front line trenches and get killed on the last day of the war, I thought, see? So, anyway, I prayed like that to go up, take over the trenches at the Maubeuge. And they were told to stand by, see? Rumours of armistice, I thought it was about 8 o'clock. Basically, the arms had been signed, so we dig up to the line, so we kept back from Maubeuge. So I remember a message coming through from the German artillery saying that a British battery of artillery was still firing at the Germans at 12 o'clock. Outside, and they were, I suppose, just said, give them another one, you know. But
how did you feel about the armistice when it was signed?
What
did you feel about the armistice?
Oh, very pleased, of course. So, I didn't worry me a great deal. Being a regular soldier, so I didn't. I got no girlfriends at home and that sort of thing. And I got my mother; she's a widow. But there's nobody there. That and I'd been in the army some years, and I'd lived away from home. So it didn't the calling to me that it would have both the other brothers that came out from England. But anyway, we were there about.
Did you intend to stay in the army? Was that your initial?
No, I wanted to get out of it.
No, why was that?
I'd had enough then. I was just fed up with this all. I knew very well that my life was not in the army. I wouldn't have done any good in the army like to make any headway. I knew that. I wanted to make a fresh start in life and do something.
Why didn't you think you'd get on in the army?
Well, I didn't think the opportunities were there like there were in civilian life. I said, the more chance, I thought, of a fellow getting on in civilian life, if he got any brains at all, was in the army. It was a slow protest as they get down, you see, but I thought it was. Anyway, a week after we'd been. After we'd about a week, they sent me out to say any man that had fought at the Battle of Mons would be taken into Mons and given a luncheon. So they found about 10 of us, I think, and to go to Mons. It was quite a good thing that was. So we take the town hall at Mons, and the mayor, he was gave us his lunch, you know, and said, made a speech and said, we had cups of coffee. I had nothing I'll get for 4 or 5 years. That was all the food. We had went to all the royal silvers on the tables and cups and all gold, all silver. This was silver that on this table, you know. So the mayor came along and made a speech. I didn't know what he said, but thanking us for what we'd done and all that. And he said, the coffee you're drinking, he got little coffee cups, you know, and things I never had before. He said, the coffee you're drinking has been buried for 4.5 years. He said, this was buried from the first day the Germans were in the Mons, and it's been taken up. So you're the first people to have coffee for 4.5 years in this country, real coffee. Right. So, I remember that well. And when I chanced to get it, another thing I had was a. Then I got the Mons, and our colonel, man Johnson, he said, they wanted somebody to cater the officers of mess. I told him this. The officers of mess is in Cologne.
You went to Cologne?
Went to Cologne, from Mons went to Cologne, the army of occupation. And one in Cologne, he's been there about a day, and this officer called the colonel Johnson, I don't know, must have been, he said, we called that day, but it was after going in the scene, he said, the whole brick, he said, you know, he said, you're the only one that did this reason I came out with it. He said, then for years. He said, now, so I want you to take over, he said, as mess caterer, caterer for the officers' mess. So I said, what am I going to do? So he said, I'll buy the food for the officers, I'll give them money. He said, you might do something. I said, no, I can't, then I'm German, I couldn't go and buy food from German shops. How can I do that? Well, he said, you'll find out. So what I know of you, he said, you'll soon find out something. He said, I suppose he wants me. So I thought, well, he said, we'll give you a mess cart, rather than the draft, we'll drive you into Cologne, it was outside Cologne, it was on Black Sign, on the Rhine. And he said, we'll drive you in, he said, you'll get a list of stuff you want to buy, and they give you the money, you buy it, and you back. So all you've got to do is it. So also, we have billed in a German farmer's house, big German farmer. He's head of the Rhine provinces or something, a very big farmer. Nice old boy, speak English. So he's built in his barns and places like that. So I've been there about a week. I got friendly with him in this one. So I said, told him I should. I've got a job to do. I said, I'm talking about Barney. I said, I don't know anything about German. He said, Barney, I said, it's all German. So he said, he said, you meet me in Cologne tomorrow. He said, and I'll put you right. He said, so I'm a fat old German. No, very nice chap. So on the next day, I went with old Fitzjohn the mess cart into Cologne, about 7 miles away. And he told me to meet him at number 75 Kohnstrasse, he says, some boy. So I found Kohnstrasse, it was the main street in Cologne, and found 75, and knocked at the door, and somebody else knocked on. He said, "Old boy, come in, when I get in there." There was about 20 of these men, all dressed in frock coats and that sort of thing, you know, with drink all on the table, and I think they were kind of a stock exchange, and I kind of the different ones are saying 30,000 francs. They will say 80,000 francs. I don't know what they're talking about. But the old boy said, "Would you like a drink? Schnapps?" So I said, "Yes." So he gave me a bottle of brandy and whiskey with it. Another drink. Well, then I had another one. I said, "Oh, I've been there half an hour." I said, "What about this stuff I've got to buy?" I said, "I've got to buy all this food to him." So he said, "Oh, that'll be all right. I'll see you all right." So I said, "Yeah, but I want to go." I said, "I left that man in the van down in the marketplace, going to the marketplace." So that came up, he said, he took me to the shop to buy the food, and I've got to buy a lot of wine. See, they give me a lift of champagne and wine. He was a white officer, so he bought it for me. So he knew this woman very well in this big wine shop. So he said to me, you have some big cigar? He bought me a cigar. He said, and champagne. So I said, yes. So he gave me a lot of champagne and another cigar. And loaded all these boxes, and I went down to Fitzjohn in the marketplace, bought the van down. I told her, Fitzjohn, I said, I've had a champagne for me. I said, and a cigar. He said, "Are you want to take me out tonight?" He said, "Don't you go back to the van." He said, "I'll take you out." He said to me. So I don't know what to think of that. So I said, "Well, Fitzjohn's older than me." I said, "Fitzjohn, he wants to take me out." So I don't know whether to trust him or not. So he's homosexuals. I did that with the van, and I didn't know something bad about it. I was a bit nervy. So he said, "He's all right." He said, "You go, you'll have another night out of your life like if you take him. He's a wealthy old man like that. Said, you'll be all right." So I said, "Think I ought to stop?" He said, "Yeah, she'll bring you back." So with that, Fitzjohn went off with all the wines, that sort of thing, but brought to the officers, and I stopped there. He took me out to a meal, and he took me out to some big hotel in Cologne where there was a lot of dancing going on and all that sort of people with drinks. And he got to a table and put me down. I ordered different drinks, and I was drinking stuff. In like red stuff and green stuff, God knows, I don't know what I'd think. So I knew that I couldn't get up. I knew I couldn't stand. There was the only British soldiers in there, a lot of German soldiers, these German civilians. So that behind me, there was a marble column behind me. So I thought, if I get up, I'll lean against that till I get a start. So when the time came to go, I got up for that. Then when I got out of the way, I couldn't move. So the old boy told me, said, "Come on," in German. Come on. He took me down to Cologne station and got me on the train, and he went back with me and took back home to his farm in where we started off from. So the night we went there, but he's got the old boy. I was there some little time in Cologne, different places.
You were billeted in different places?
What, in Cologne?
Yeah.
Yes, different to move from one place to another, you know.
How did you get on with the German population as a whole?
All right.
Was there any bitterness?
No, not a bit. Well, I was there some months there, you know. One place he used to call me Willie. Willie, he used to say. I was asleep upstairs in this house sometimes. I'd say, "Willie." So I'd say, "Yes." Tea, or coffee mostly, coffee. And perhaps I'd have done this. She'd come upstairs and shake me. "Come on, come on, and get the coffee." Yes, I was all right with them. Very nice people. I remember that one old boy. Oh, then I moved from there to a castle on the Rhine. Just out, headquarters, the officer's headquarters, the castle, and the troops were sticking in the village called Blatzheim on the Rhine. So I had a job with buying all this stuff for me, you know, and there's a waiter there, was it the affair? I didn't sleep in their castle. I used to sleep in the village with some of the others, and I managed to get all the whiskey, you know, and all these like it's the mother, the father, a girl, myself. Girls about my age, a bit older, and they treat me very well, did you? So I was there some little time, and I said, "Well, you like whiskey? You like whiskey?" He said, "Ooh." Then I got a bottle for him. And I could see him the first time he sat down. That I went down to his house, and he sat down and saw the German. He's only a little bit. He's station master. He's done everything on the railway. He's a ticket collector, porter, station, all in one. And yes, he said the ticket from his house. He used to come down to him from the station, get the ticket to his house, and so he said, "Oh, to whiskey." He said, I got very friendly with a girl. It's girl there, you know. So we used to go out at night sometimes. And one night I wanted to, I didn't want him and her to know the old man and the woman, you know. So I sit at the table with them, and I should touch her leg under the table, my foot, I'd touch her foot like this, she'd give a little tap like much to say, "I'll see you outside when they, you know, down." So one night I sit there, I touched her foot, she'd made no response, and look, I give another couple of minutes, and so I dropped something, it was like a knife on the table, looked up, I touched the old man. Oh, they were nice people. I had a good time there. Another time there, this was in Germany too, day before Christmas. I was billeted with three others in this another German house. And she said, the woman said, there were two widows there. They were both killed on the British front. They'll be in their 30s, I suppose, or something like that. So one, Madame Judith, as we called her, she someone, they said, you verstehen Kartoffel? I said, so he went and said, "Because I get a potato out." She said, "Allemand, German Kartoffel, potato, it's Kartoffel." So she said, German, she might just understand this in a lot of German. She said, German farmer, he was about half a mile from the village, got a farm there. This time of winter, all snow there, you know. She said, German farmer got lots of field kartoffel, plenty of potatoes, and they got nothing, these two women and two of these children. So he said, understood, he said, would we get some steel of them, stolen them? So he said, you might understand that she wants us to go with her at night time with some sacks and pinch the farmer's potatoes. He said, yes, we do it. So that night, she led us, about three of us fellows, you know, with sacks, through this old rough old ground to where these farmers' clamps were, and we clamped all, pull all the snow and wave their hands and fingers, and this filled these sacks, three sacks of potatoes for the old girls, carried them back to her house, and she was obviously very good at that, lost her children for months, the potatoes. So this was on a Saturday night. The next day was Sunday, so on Sunday morning, we had been there on the Sunday before, she came down and just came down, so we got the kirk, got the church. So I said, all dressed up in fine, everywhere, you know, going to the church. And I said, you don't make me laugh. And yesterday I said, he was pinching the farmer's potatoes. I said, and there goes my shirt and plate. She said something to me that I shall never forget. Never, never in my life. And I've repeated lots of times. She turned around and said to me, all around the wall, they're very religious. There's a picture of Jesus Christ around the wall in this house. She said, farmer, plenty of potatoes. Ish. Nish Kartoff, we know potato. He said, Jesus Christ, he understands. I say, he forgives us for pinching the farmer's potato. I'll enjoy your right too. Then he said, yes. He said, farmer, plenty of potatoes, me none. Jesus Christ understands why we stole them.
Besides being mess orderly at Cologne, what other duties did you, and in fact, the battalion have? What were you doing while you were there? What did you do?
Well, only drilling was all. Did nothing else, you drilling and craves and that sort of thing. And so they kept thinking, you know, there was games. Oh, did this one too. I think of these crazy that they held different athletes, athletic things, they like running and jumping, that sort of thing. But they held amongst all the troops on the Rhine. There's a lot of troops on the Rhine then. So every bit they organised for these different sports, and one was a marathon, 26-mile marathon. So every regiment got to send four men to represent the four men have got to go to each battalion, rather, So when the whole battalion were there, there was about 200 men. So the night before this, the sergeant, one sergeant came to me, said, "Oh, Brooke," he said, "will you take," he said, "one of our men have fallen sick," he said, "in the marathon race tomorrow." He said, "would you take his place?" I said, "so I've been out here 4.5 years. I said, "these, some of these men have just come out of England, never been out like before, fit and well." I said, "what about them?" I thought, "I can't, I'm not fit enough." So he said, "oh," he said, "you used to do some running." I did in the peacetime. He said, "you did running then," he said, "and he's only going to make the number up." He said, "four, we've got to send four." He said, "so will you do it?" So I said, "all right, I'll do it." So next morning, up the hills in Germany, go 26 miles. So we started, I've just started off, and I'm with them. Then being on some way, and I felt all right. I see all these fellows, knowing nothing behind me. I was even about the first 25 or so. All these fellows up these hills and running all along, like you see in a marathon race. So I kept on, and I felt all right. I felt fit, and I got into up to the first two in this, and we were a good space behind one another. And I kept it all right, and got on. In the end, I won it. I won this race, this marathon, and I met by about 300 yards. And I ran in army boots, khaki trousers, and won that by 26 miles that day. And ended up in the village street when it finished. Some generals sitting at a table with books, and, you know, take the names. I heard one general say to another, "what's this for the name?" So somebody looked at his old book. He said, "we've never heard of him before." He said, "I suppose he thought he could be some well-known runner come home." But in it, the fellow, I found out, the fellow that I beat there, was in the 1914, 1918. He's in the 1912 Olympic Games, Stockholm, the second man in. So I didn't disadvantage. I won that race.
Had you done a lot of running before?
Yes. Did a lot of pace. I didn't really run at Aldershot. I've run every night from Aldershot, with some others, you know, some of them by myself, Aldershot down, Farnham and Farnborough and all that around the south. Did you 20 miles.
Did you run while you were out of the line during the war?
Oh, not during the war, no.
So you hadn't really done any running?
No. That's what I said to him. "I'm not fit," he said. Because he's not regular sergeant. Sergeant made him there. He said, "you've done running." I said, "yes," I said, "they're different. I've been 4.5 years. Then stuck in this business stuff." I said, "these fellows," I said, "just come out of England, a lot of years." I said, "I'm not fit by any means. I can't do that." "Oh," he said, "you'll make the number up." He said, you know, "I wonder if this marathon." So they have got kind of been demobilised.
When did you come to be demobilised?
The war finished in the November. I got demobilised in the February the next year.
Could you have stayed on if you'd wanted to?
I didn't want to. I don't know about it. This has been demobbed. What they thought about this last war? Got demobbed with others. Left the regiment in Cologne. Came down to Dunkirk to get a boat to come across to England. And when we got there, there was no boat. There was about 250 fellas, the different Canadians and Australians and Americans, and all the mobs, you see. And they said, we had to lie on this boat, beach of Dunkirk, in the middle of February, no, just an overcoat, for two nights there, in that snow. It was a terrible place. And then when the boat came, we got on it, came to Dover. Went up to Dover Castle to stay the night. They thought they're going to have a train next morning to take the Dover Castle demobilisation. So when we got to Dover, they went to get some food. They had to take a plate, or a little canteen or something, and they smacked two pieces of fat ham. No bread. That's all we got. During the evening, they said, "there's no train running to Victoria from Dover till tomorrow morning." So they'll have to stop at Dover for the night. So I thought, "I'm going to stay up here in this old place. I'm going down there." I'd never been to Dover before, so I'll go down to Dover and have a look at what it's like. See, so I'll get me down.